This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me today. We've got another hour of old-time radio crime for you, beginning with Sherlock Holmes. We'll hear The Eyes of Mr. Layton, his episode from September 24th, 1945. After that, it's Nero Wolfe in The Case of the Disappearing Diamonds. That story first aired March 9th, 1951.
This episode from the life of Sherlock Holmes will be transmitted to our men and women overseas by shortwave and through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invites you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting story about his good friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. And I'd like to tell you something that maybe you already know. The fact that America's favorite wine is port wine. Did you know that? If you didn't, you'll know why port is the way out front favorite if you'll just sample some Petri California port. You just look at that Petri port and you know it's good. That wonderful, deep, rich red color. And Petri port is so clear. Just hold it to the light and you can sort of see right through the glass. But what you want to know really about a wine is how does it taste? And I'll tell you something. I've never yet been able to find the adjective that'll do Petri port justice. It's wonderful, honest. You've just got to taste it for yourself and find out for yourself. You'll love that Petri port in the evening after dinner when you're sitting around listening to the radio. And it's perfect to serve your friends when they come over. You can show them that Petri label, too. In fact, you can show it proudly. Because the name Petri is the proudest name in the history of American wines. And now for our weekly doctor's visit. Let's see.
No, Mr. Bartell. Don't say let's see if he's expecting us. You know I always expect you this time on Monday evenings, my boy. So draw up your usual chair and settle down.
Thanks, Doctor.
That's it.
All alone this evening, Doctor? Where are the puppies?
Out on the patio. They had a most unfortunate encounter with a dead seal on the beach this afternoon. In consequence, they're a little malodorous, shall we say.
In that case, Doctor, perhaps we'd better change the subject. So, suppose I ask you about tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure.
Well, my boy, as I told you last week, the story took place in the foul alleyways of Limehouse. It was there on a foggy December evening in 1890 that my story began. An old friend and patient of mine, Isa Whitney, had disappeared, and his distraught wife had come to me for help. Knowing the man to be the victim of the shocking habit of taking opium, I suspected that I might find him in one of the vile dens inhabited by the dregs of the waterfront. And so, Mr. Bartell, about 5 o'clock on that December evening, I began my search. After an hour of fruitless wanderings, I found myself in a vile alley called Upper Swandam Lane. I could hear the distant moans of the river boats as I walked, eyes alert, and hand on the revolver in my coat pocket. Suddenly, I saw a steep flight of steps leading down to a black gap, like the mouth of a cave. I walked down them. The steps were worn hollow in the center by the ceaseless tread of stumbling feet. I reached the bottom. A door faced me, and above it, a flickering oil lamp winked warnings at me. I found the latch and lifted it. The door squeaked open protestingly. And I entered. There was a tinkle of Chinese wind bells as I walked towards a long, low room. A strange sight met my eyes. Through the gloom, thick and heavy with the brown opium smoke, I saw that the room was terraced with wooden berths, like the forecastle of an emigrant ship. Out of the shadows, there glimmered little red circles of light, now bright, now faint, as a burning poison waxed or waned in the metal pipes. Bodies lay in strange, fantastic poses. Bowed shoulders, bent knees, heads thrown back, the attendant came up to me with a pipe and beckoned me to an empty berth. I haven't come here to smoke your filthy drug. I'm looking for a friend, Mr. Isa Whitney.
No, Mr. Whitney here.
Well, I'm going to search the place.
You must not disturb the priest.
I'm carrying a revolver, so you'd better not argue with me, my good man. Out of the way. I searched that filthy den, but found no trace of my missing friend. As I was leaving in despair, a long, shaking hand reached out and plucked at my sleeve. I turned, and there, sprawled in a berth, was the wreckage of a man. His gaunt face yellow and twitching, his clothes filthy and ragged, and the pupil of his eyes like pinpoints. He spoke to me in a thin, quavering voice.
For heaven's sake, get me out of here.
Now, look here, my man.
Don't say you won't help me, Governor. Ain't you got an art? Please help me, Governor. Take me out of here. Strike me pink. I'm going to bomb you, I tell you.
Oh, what must you expect if you indulge in this filthy habit?
Take me out of here, Governor. I'll go straight this time. Cross me out, I will.
Oh, very well. Come along with me. I suppose it's my duty to help you.
Ah, bless you, Governor.
Here
you
are. Here, now, give me your arm.
You cannot take him away. He owe me money.
That's a bleeding lie. I paid him when I come in, I did.
He cannot go with you, mister.
You remember what I said about my revolver, you blackguard? If I have any more trouble with you, I'll fetch the police. Come along.
He owe me money. He owe me money.
Infernal scoundrel, owe me money.
You tell him all proper, Governor. And I hope you didn't.
Now, look here, my good man. I'll give you a square meal, some advice, and some medical attention. But the rest...
Never mind the advice, Watson, but I'll take you up on that square meal.
Holmes!
Yes, I'm very glad to see you, old fellow. What brought you to that filthy den of iniquity?
Oh, gracious me, I want to find a friend.
And I, an enemy.
Your disguise is wonderful. It completely fooled me.
But I'm afraid the proprietor was beginning to penetrate it. That's why I staged the little rescue scene. Had I been recognized, my life wouldn't have been worth an hour's purchase.
Well, how long had you been there? Why were you there? Come on, Holmes. Tell me all about it.
With pleasure, old chap. But first, let's find a chop house. I want that square meal you promised me. An excellent meal, Watson.
Yes, you're surprisingly good for such a shoddy-looking place. Well, Holmes, now perhaps you'll tell me what you were doing in that opium den. I've already told you my story.
I'm shadowing a most unusual criminal. A man who haunts the opium dens. Yet I know that he himself is not an addict.
Well, I don't see anything very criminal about that. He might be looking for a thrill, or perhaps he's one of those writer fellows or something.
But this man pretends to be an addict. I've watched him closely. He fakes his smoking, and grease paint has enabled him to simulate the characteristic pallor of a drug victim. He even affects the typical mannerism of nose scratching, but it's his eyes that give him away.
The pupils are wide open, I suppose.
Exactly, old fellow. Whereas, if he were really addicted to the drug, they would, as you know, be contracted. I myself always treat my eyes with a special kind of drop on the occasion when, I have to enter these dens.
Why does a man haunt an opium den in order not to smoke?
That, my dear Watson, is the problem that I intend to solve.
Well, perhaps the fellow's a policeman or a private detective like yourself, Holmes.
I've already checked on those possibilities. No, Watson, I believe there is only one answer. I believe the man is planning a murder.
A murder?
Attempting setting for a murder. Your victim is an addict, drugged and helpless. Your witnesses are in an equal state of befuddlement. The proprietor is anxious to cover up the crime because of the police.
That you? Yes, Holmes.
Now, the question is, who is the intended victim? That, my dear Watson, is why I've been shadowing this man. Unfortunately, he was not present in the den we just left, but I intend to continue my search.
Holmes, can I help you? My wife's away, you know. You know, it's a long time since we were on a case together.
I should be delighted, my dear chap. I've missed you sadly during the past few months.
And I, you, Holmes. What's the next move?
Back to Baker Street, old fellow. My disguise is wearing thin, and I must contrive a new one. New disguise, eh? Well, which one shall it be, Watson?
Well, how about the old flower seller? I love that one.
Well, it's pretty fresh, Varlitz.
Oh, no, my dear fellow, no. Hardly appropriate for an opium den. In any case, the clothes are so wretchedly uncomfortable.
Well, how about the music hall singer?
Oh, that chap, yes. Oh, I don't want to be beside the seaside. Oh, I don't want to be beside the sea. I don't want to stroll along the prom, 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 where the brass band plays tiddly. Oh, confound it. Who can that be?
You weren't expecting anyone, were you?
No.
This is just like the old days. The doorbell ringing, Mrs. Hudson toddling off, and bringing up some poor devil in trouble, and...
You say that rather wistfully, old fellow. Don't tell me that you repent of marriage.
No, of course not, Holmes. Mary's a perfect darling, and I couldn't be happier. Just the same. It's rather fun to be back here again.
Come in. Yes, Mrs. Hudson?
It's a gentleman, sir. He gave me this card. Says he's very anxious to see you.
Wayne J. Layton, President, Layton Corporation, Chicago, United States. Ask him to come up, will you, Mrs. Hudson?
Aye, sir. Well, it's quite the cold times to see you back here, Dr. Watson.
That's just what I was saying myself, Mrs. Hudson.
Mr. Layton has scribbled a message on the back of his card. If £1,000 for a week's work interests you, you'll see me.
£1,000?
Big fish, Watson. Very big fish.
This way, sir.
Thank you.
Oh. How do you do, Mr. Layton?
I guess you're Sherlock Holmes.
You guessed correctly, sir. Excuse me. Oh, Mrs. Hudson. Just a moment, Mrs. Hudson.
Aye, Mr. Holmes.
Sit down, won't you, Mr. Layton? My name's Watson, Dr. Watson. I'm Sherlock Holmes' colleague.
Yes, I've heard about you, too. Like a cigar, Doctor? It's a good one. Set me back 3 shillings.
Oh, 3 shillings. Oh, thank you. That's very nice, sir. Just put one.
Introduce yourself. Splendid. And now, Mr. Layton, may I ask what brings you here?
I'll talk fast and to the point. I'm a businessman. I like to do things in a business way. I have a chance to control the guano deposits at the Republic of San Pedro. Their minister will be in London tomorrow, and if it weren't for one thing, I know that I could swing the deal and get the concession.
And what is that one thing, Mr. Layton?
The deal is secrecy. I thought no one knew about it, but when I got here, I found out that my biggest business rival has gotten wind of what's going on. He's an Englishman. I've never met him, but he's right here in London. Now, I'm not going to tell you his name, not until you give me your word that you'll work for me.
Just what you wish me to do, Mr. Layton.
Get this rival of mine and keep him out of circulation for a week. I don't care how you do it, and I won't ask. In a week's time, I'll give you the other half of this £500 I brought with me.
Oh, good, Scott. What kind of detective
Watson,
do you...
Watson, give Mr. Layton his hat and gloves. That's it. Thanks, old fellow. Goodbye, sir.
What are you doing, throwing me out?
I can't think where you gathered the impression that I indulged in kidnapping. Once again, goodbye, sir.
And here, sir, you can take back your cigar.
Well, if you don't want some easy money, I'll soon find someone else that does. This is the last you'll see of me, Mr. Holmes.
Life is full of little consolations.
Some people seem to think that money can...
Watson, the game's afoot. Mr. Layton is the man I've been seeking. The man who pretends to be an opium smoker.
Why, Basil, did you let him get away? Here, I'll go after him.
No. Don't worry. I've already arranged for that.
Oh, how?
When I left the room just now to talk to Mrs. Hudson, I was intending to tell her to summon some of my band of street urchins. You know, the Baker Street irregulars. When she informed me that half a dozen of them were in the kitchen at this very moment, partaking of one of her incomparable steak and kidney pies, the rest should be obvious.
You left instructions for one of them to shadow Mr. Layton when he left her.
Elementary, my dear Watson.
Oh, don't tell me that Layton back again.
No, I think not. I should say that at the moment he's just about to walk out of the front door. No, I think we shall have another visitor. And judging by the commotion, the incoming and the outgoing visitors know each other and are not on the best of terms.
Well, sounds to me as if they're having a fight.
Here comes Mrs. Hudson to tell us about it. Come in.
Oh, Mr. Holmes, you've got another visitor.
So I gathered. Mrs. Hudson, you gave my instructions to one of the boys?
I did that, sir. Young Wiggins was going to follow the gentleman.
Well, Mrs. Hudson, what was all that commotion about downstairs just now?
Oh, it was the two gentlemen shouting at each other. Him that was leaving and the one that was waiting on the doorstep.
And who is our new visitor, Mrs. Hudson?
Here's his card, sir.
Oh, thank you. Linton Chumley, 9 Belgrave Square. Well... Ask him to come up, will you, Mrs. Hudson?
Very well, Mr. Holmes.
Oh, one thing more.
Yes, sir.
Please instruct another of the Baker Street irregulars to follow this Linton Chumley when he leaves here and report to me.
All right, sir.
You're taking no chances, Holmes, eh? You're having this fellow shadowed, too.
Layton is a potential murderer. Of that I'm convinced. This Mr. Chumley might possibly be his intended victim. While we're talking to him, Watson, old fellow, I want you to be sure to look at the condition of his eyes.
I certainly will.
Come in. Oh, good evening, Mr. Chumley.
Are you Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
I am. This is my colleague, Dr. Watson.
How do you do, sir?
That was Wayne Layton that was just left here, wasn't it?
Won't you sit down, sir?
Thank you. I don't want to sit down. All right. You needn't answer my question, but I know it was Layton. I've never met him, but I've seen his picture in the newspapers.
Oh, very well, then, sir. It was Wayne Layton.
I know why he came to you. He's trying to have me put out of the way while he closes that deal on the San Pedro and Guano concession. Now, look here, Holmes. You've got to be on my side. Whatever fee he offered you to dispose of me, I'll double it if you'll take care of him for a few days.
Oh, dear me, this is becoming monotonous. Watson?
The hat and gloves?
Thank you, old chap. That's right.
Good night, Mr. Chumley.
Look here, Holmes. I'll treble his fee. I'll quadruple it.
My dear Mr. Chumley, I have accepted no fee from Mr. Layton. I don't propose to accept one from you. Your hat and glove, sir?
That man is out to kill me, Holmes. Well, if you won't help me, I'll go to the police.
That's an excellent idea, Mr. Chumley. Again, good night.
Did you notice his eyes, Watson?
Yes, the pupils were contracted. He's obviously an opium addict.
And also a potential corpse.
But what do we do now? Wait for the irregulars to report?
No, you return home for your medical bag. I have a feeling that you'll need it before the night is out. Then come back here. If I've gone before you return, I'll send one of the irregulars to bring you to wherever I may be. Wait until you receive a message from me. On your way, old chap. There's work ahead of us.
Wiggins, you're certain that this is the place that Mr. Holmes told you to bring me to?
Oh, yes, Dr. Watson. The corner of Swanham Line and Brixell Street, Mr. Holmes said.
Yeah, well, this is the spot, all right. I don't see any sign of him. Hello? This old woman coming towards us. So that's the disguise he chose.
Oh, spare me a few coppers, will you, mister? My feet had something awful, and I ain't had a bite of food all day.
Oh, no, you don't, Holmes. You can't fool me this time. As a matter of fact, your makeup isn't very convincing. You hardly look like a woman, and nobody's nose could be quite as red as that.
Don't look like a woman, don't I? My nose is too red, is it? I'll take that.
No, steady, look
here. Making fun of a poor old woman who's plight in me.
Madam, I didn't mean to insult you.
Well, matey, she gave you a bit of work for all right, didn't she? Boxed your ears. No mistake about it.
You mind your own business. And anyhow, why aren't you aboard your ship at this time of night?
Because I'm not a sailor, Watson.
It's Mr. Holmes.
Great heavens, Holmes. I wish you wouldn't confuse me like this. I'd never have recognized you.
My dear Watson, when you're able to recognize me, it will indeed be the beginning of the end. When your eagle eye penetrates my disguise, I shall realize that my retirement is imminent. But enough of this. See that house opposite?
You mean the ramshackle place with the broken tiled roof?
Yes, I gave the irregulars instructions to let me know at once if our two quarries ever enter the same house at the one time. They're inside there now. I'm going in after them.
Be careful, Holmes. I better come along with you.
Can't I come too, Mr. Holmes?
No, certainly not. Both keep watch outside. If I need any help, I'll smash one of the windows, and then you can come in after me. Wait here for me. I don't expect I'll be very long.
But I'll be here, Holmes. Don't worry about me. Just take good care of yourself.
It's 1 o'clock, Doctor.
Yes, I know, Wiggins. He's been in there half an hour. I'm beginning to get worried.
Start going off,
no,
sir.
No, Wiggins. You know Mr. Holmes. When he gives orders, he likes some... There's a signal for help. Keep watching the house, Wiggins. I'll be out in 5 minutes. Go for the police.
Right, you are, sir.
All right, Holmes, all right. I'm coming.
You have searched my house from basement to attic. Why do you not give up? I tell you again, there has been no one here tonight.
But my friend came in here half an hour ago. I saw him. And before that, two other men are known to have come in here.
If that is so, then where are they? Three men cannot vanish.
That's just the point, you scoundrel. Out of the way. I'm going to search this hovel again. I'm not leaving here until I find Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
You'll hear the rest of Dr. Watson's story in just a second. And if you don't mind, I'll take that second to say just one word to the ladies. And that word is Muscatel. Petri California Muscatel. I want you women to know about it because Petri Muscatel is one wine that practically every woman likes. Maybe because it's such a beautiful color, like pale gold. But I guess really because Petri Muscatel brings you the wonderful flavor of luscious, sun-ripened muscat grapes. And that's a flavor. Try Petri Muscatel after dinner, or any time as a change from Petri Port. Remember, if it's a Petri wine, you know it's a good wine. And now back to Dr. Watson and tonight's story, The Eyes of Mr. Layton. Well, what happened next, Doctor? When you searched the house for the second time, did you find any trace of Sherlock Holmes or the two rival businessmen?
No, Mr. Bartell, I'm afraid I didn't.
What did you do?
I told Wiggins to report the matter to the nearest police station and then rattle back to Baker Street in a hansom cab as fast as I could. When I arrived at the old familiar doorstep, I wrenched at the bell in a frenzy of anxiety. Finally, the door opened, and there stood Mrs. Hudson.
Dr. Watson, what is it, sir? Why, you're as white as a ghost.
Mr. Holmes, is he here?
Aye, sir, came in half an hour ago. He was dressed as a sailor and was half carrying some drunken friend of his.
Oh, thank heavens he's safe. I'll go up.
All right, sir.
I want to know, Jack. There you are.
Holmes, I can't tell you how glad I am to see you. Who's that lying on the sofa?
Well, up with your back, Watson. Though I'm afraid the poor devil's done for.
Great Scott, it's Wayne Layton, the American fella.
With a knife wound between his ribs. See what you can do for him, will you?
Right. This is extraordinary, Holmes. You said that Layton was a potential murderer. And now he's a victim himself.
A biter bit, eh, old chap?
Yes, he's still breathing, but he hasn't a chance. I'll try him with an injection of strychnine. Holmes, how did you get his body out of the house? I searched the place from top to bottom. I found no trace of any of you.
When I went in, I found the stabbing had already taken place. The proprietor then bribed me, or rather the broken-down cellar he took me for, to smuggle the body out through the secret stairway leading to the wards at the back of the house.
Well, there's no trace of Chumley there?
No, he must have left before me by the same exit.
And then you smashed the window and bolted.
Yes, I knew that I could count on you to hold the fort while I was getting the body away. Let's try to say something, Watson.
Yes, the injection's beginning to take effect.
Yes, Mr. Layton? What are you trying to say?
Tell us, who stabbed you, sir?
Lips are moving.
Mandalay.
He's dead, Holmes.
Yes, but he gave us the clue to the murderer's identity.
How?
In the word he mumbled just before he died.
It sounded to me as if he said Mandalay.
Precisely, old fellow. Never did a corpse give us a clearer instruction as to our next and final move.
And that is?
Back to Limehouse, Watson. Back to Limehouse. Here we are. This must be the place.
What's this? Another opium den?
Yes, I knew that since Chumley refrained from smoking earlier on in the night, in order to keep his faculties alert for murder, that an enormous reaction would set in. He'd have to find a den at once, and beyond question, a different one from that in which the murder was committed.
But how do you know that he's inside here?
Well, just before you returned to Baker Street tonight, I had a message from one of my irregulars. He tracked him here after he escaped from the scene of the stabbing.
That was a couple of hours ago. He might have slipped away again.
No, Watson, tonight he came to drown his senses with a wretched drug. He'll be here. Come on.
Second injection of caffeine should bring him round. He's heavily drugged, but I think it'll work.
Surprising what a £5 note will do, isn't it?
Yes, the proprietor let us bring Chumley into this private room and he... Look, he's coming too.
Who are you? What do you want?
You remember me, sir? I'm Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, I remember you.
You're in serious trouble, Mr. Chumley. Very serious trouble.
Trouble? What trouble?
Wayne Layton didn't die.
Oh.
He's badly wounded, but he's going to live. He's at Baker Street now. He wants to go to the police and give evidence.
You've got to get me out of this, Holmes. I'll pay you anything. 10,000, 20,000.
Why did you stab Layton?
He was in my way. I wanted the San Pedro concession. I meant to kill him. But we can fix it up now, can't we, Holmes? We can fix it up
now. Yes, we can fix it beautifully, sir.
As neat a murder confession as ever I listened to, Holmes.
Exactly. Come along, Mr. Chumley. I think some night air will be good for you. We'll take you for a nice drive to Scotland Yard.
I brought you some kippers, gentlemen. You've both been up all night, and I'm sure you can do it.
That's very thoughtful of you, Mrs. Hudson.
Yes, indeed it is.
What is Mrs. Watson going to say when she finds you've been out all night?
Oh, don't you worry about that, Mrs. Hudson. She's very understanding.
It's lucky for you that she is. Well, I'll go and leave you to your breakfast.
Holmes.
Yes, dear fellow?
There's only one thing that puzzles me about this case.
Oh, what's that?
When Leighton was dying, he muttered the word Mandalay. How did that give you the key to the murderer's identity?
Oh, the dead American had never met Mr. Chumley, you remember, except when they bumped into each other in our hallway.
Yes, he told us that he recognized him from the newspaper photographs.
Being an American, he had no reason to know that the name Chumley is in no way pronounced the way it is spelt.
But you, I never thought of that. Chumley. That name spelt C-H-O-L, Chow, M-O-N, Mon, D-E-Dur, L-E-Y. Chol Mondeley. Mondeley.
Precisely, old fellow. What you thought to be Mandalay was really Chol Mondeley, the name of the murderer.
What an amazing case. You did a remarkable job, Holmes. I'm beginning to be confoundedly sleepy.
Why not sleep, old chap? Your old room's all ready for you.
Are you going to take a nap?
Oh, dear me, no. I have much too busy a day ahead of me. Let me look at my engagement book. Baxter Square murder. I've put the police on the track. The Duchess of Ferrers. I've got her material. The princess who was about to run away from home. Good gracious me, let her run. The Pope's cameos. Ah, yes, yes. His Holiness must not be kept waiting.
Can I help you again, Holmes? Mary doesn't return until tomorrow.
Well, I thought you were sleepy, old fellow.
Sleepy rubbish. I never felt more wide awake in my life.
That was a swell story, Doctor.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
And it was really funny when you mistook that old lady for Holmes and she slapped your face.
It wasn't very funny at all.
Ah, sure it was. Come on, admit it, Doctor.
Well, she did look like Holmes in disguise, you know, and you'd have made the same mistake that I did.
Okay, okay.
Her nose was ridiculously red, and she did look like a man.
Look, Doctor, forget I ever said anything.
Huh?
I won't say another word. I'll keep my mouth closed forever.
Oh, come on, I wouldn't do that. Mr. Bartell? Mr. Bartell? Won't you even open your mouth to finish your wine? Your Petri wine?
Okay, you win. You know I'll open my mouth for Petri wine any time. That Petri wine is always good wine. And for good reason, too. The Petri family has always owned and operated the Petri business. They've been making fine wines for three generations, since way back in the 1800s. That adds up to a lot of experience. Experience handed on down from father to son, from father to son. The Petri family really knows how to turn luscious California grapes into fragrant, delicious wine. And that's why, no matter what kind of wine you want, I'm sure you'll like it better if it's a Petri wine. Because Petri took time to bring you good wine. And now, Dr. Watson, what story are you going to tell us next week?
Well, now, next week, Mr. Bartell, I'm going to tell you a most unusual adventure that Holmes and I had in the heart of the English countryside. It concerns a corpse, a missing revolver, and a beautiful girl who was frightened of her own shadow.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and is based on an incident in the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Man with the Twisted Lip. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week, same time, same station.
The Petri family took the time to bring you such good wine. So when you eat and when you cook, remember Petri wine.
To make good food taste better, remember...
Pet, pet, Petri wine.
This is Harry Bartell saying goodnight for the Petri family. Sherlock Holmes comes to you from our Hollywood studios. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Ladies and gentlemen, the ringing of that phone bell brings you mystery, adventure.
Nero Wolfe's office, Archie Goodwin speaking.
Willie Inch, did you say? Just a second. Do you want to talk to a fellow named Willie Inch, which I doubt?
No.
He says he's got to see you. Got to.
Who is he?
Well, I'll ask. Mr. Wolf doesn't recognize your name, Mr. Inch. He wants to know who you are. Just a second. I'll tell him. Mr. Inch says he's a sneak thief. He says you never heard of him, but he's heard of you. Should I tell him to get lost?
Wait a minute, Archie. Ask him what he wants.
Inch, Mr. Wolf wants to know what you want to see him about. A phony murder rap. Says a phony murder rap.
It'd have to be, wouldn't it, Archie?
How do you mean?
Phony, I mean. Did you ever hear of a sneak thief committing murder if it could possibly be avoided? Yes, Archie, tell Mr. Inch. I'll listen to his story.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's that renowned genius who is the bulkiest, balkiest, most ponderous, and most brilliant detective in the world. Yes, none other than that chair-born mass of unpredictable intellect, Nero Wolfe. Created by Rex Stout and brought to you in a new series of adventures over this NBC network in the person of Mr. Sidney Greenstreet.
When Mr. Wolf and I talk about this little difficulty, he calls it the case of Archie Goodwin and how he got hooked. However, I call it the case of the disappearing diamonds. I prefer my title. He prefers his. Anyhow, it started with an improbable character named Willie Inch.
That'll be our sneak thief, Archie. Let him in.
Okay, boss.
Okay.
Inch?
Yeah.
Come in. In there. I'll follow you. Mr. Wolf, this is your client.
Mr. Inch?
Yeah.
Tall fellow. Must be over 6'6". Sit down.
Where?
Archie?
Here, Mr. Inch. This ought to be comfortable.
Where, Mr. Inch?
Look, Mr. Wolf. They're going to claim that I killed a woman I never even touched. And I'm going to fry for something I never even done.
All right, Mr. Inch. How did you kill her?
I didn't. I never killed nobody in my life.
Mr. Inch, you say you're a thief. Can you prove it?
I got a record. Why?
I was wondering about that bulge in your pocket.
Oh. Oh, here? It's a silver cigarette lighter, ain't it? I guess it sort of dropped into my pocket as I was going by. You see the way it happened?
Never mind, Mr. Inch. Now tell me how you didn't kill the woman for whose murder you will fry.
Well, Mr. Wolf, sir, it was like this. There was a window half open, you see, and I happened to crawl inside the house. But hey now.
Well, what's that?
This is just between us, ain't it?
Possibly.
Well, how do you mean?
Explain, Archie.
Mr. Wolf said possibly.
Oh. Well, okay. So I happen to find myself in the bedroom, see? So I happen to sort of roam around, and I hear there's like a party going on. You know, people and music. So I lock the door.
So go on.
Let him tell it his own way, Archie. Well, Miss Inch?
So that's the mistake I make.
A mistake?
Maybe I leave my fingerprints on the door.
So?
So later, a dame gets herself knocked off in the same room, and they look for fingerprints, and they find mine. I'm it. That's all. I got a record. So the chair.
I see. Pitiful case, isn't it, Archie?
Very, very mournful.
Inch.
Yes, sir?
I presume you came away with some souvenirs?
Oh, nothing. It wasn't worth the trouble. You know, just odds and ends, junk.
Have you got the junk with you?
Yeah.
Let me see.
Here.
Cigarette case, platinum. Lighter, gold. Vanity case, gold. That's all?
Positively.
Junk, the man says.
I promise nothing, Mr. Inch, but it might be better if you told the truth.
Me?
You.
Oh, well.
One square cut emerald ring.
I just happened to find it. Here's something more.
A pewter ashtray.
Look, the room is dark. I can't see. Piles of coats under beds and hats and handbags. I take what I find.
Why didn't you turn on the lights?
One of these big standing lamps. You know what I mean.
Go on.
I bump into it, and it scares the living... I mean, it scares me.
So?
I turn the switch. It don't work.
Archie.
That sounds like the law, boss.
The law.
Stay right where you are, Willie. May I suggest there is a way to find out, Archie?
Okay. We don't want any.
Good morning, Goodwin. You remember me, your old friend, Inspector Kramer? Two gentlemen with me are also with the department, Perley and Ostrakovich. May we come in?
What do you want?
We want a murderer, and we want some rocks worth 250 grand. Does that answer your question?
What makes you think you'll find all those goodies here?
Come in, men. We know Willie Inch is here. Where is he?
Now, just a second.
We're coming with you, Goodwin.
Okay, Inspector, come along. The law.
That's Willie Inch. Frisk him. No weapons? Okay, just put the cuffs on him.
Inspector Kramer.
Oh, yes. Hello, Wolf.
I want to tell you something about this man whom you and your men have so bravely captured in my office.
You don't need to tell me about him, Wolf. We know about him.
Do you indeed?
Yes. We know he killed Mrs. Florence Avery March and stripped $250,000 worth of diamonds off her. That's all we need to know.
I didn't do no such a thing.
Where's the ice, Willie?
I never even seen none, honest.
Take him away, boys. I'll make the charge when I get back to my office.
Wait. Mr. Wolf, sir.
Take him.
Look, I ain't done nothing, I tell you.
Inspector Kramer.
Yeah. We're going to have a little talk now, aren't we?
If necessary.
How do you mean?
Explain, Archie.
Mr. Wolf means you're going to have a little talk if necessary.
Very funny. I will now draw up a chair and show you why it's necessary. In the first place, $250,000 worth of diamonds makes it necessary.
Archie, if you please, a bottle of beer.
Okay. Will the inspector name his poison?
You know I never drink on duty.
And just for me, Archie, please.
On my way. While I opened a bottle of imported beer, it occurred to me that I had something to be grateful for. At least I wasn't in Willie Inch's enormous shoes. And as I went back to the office, I had time to wonder why Mr. Wolf would stick his fat neck out for a no-good like Willie.
Thank you, Archie, and sit down, Archie. Inspector Kramer has a theory that may amuse you.
Nero Wolf's office. It's for you, Inspector.
Hello, Kramer. Yeah? A gold cigarette holder? That's all? Okay.
Inspector, do you realize that you have already taken a great deal of my time?
Archie.
Yes, Inspector?
The great Mr. Wolf just said I had a theory that might amuse you. Would you care to hear it?
I can hardly wait.
Okay. My theory is that both Wolf and you are receivers of stolen property and possibly guilty of murder conspiracy.
So far, you got me in stitches.
Willie Inch, with a record as long as your arm, robs the home of Mrs. Florence Avery Marsh. He strangles her with a silk scarf, takes the diamond she's wearing, grabs everything else that's lying around, and then what?
Is it a question?
I'll tell you what.
He will, too. Archie, listen, listen.
Then Inch brings the stuff here, the stuff that's piled on Wolf's desk and the diamonds. You want me to tell you where the diamonds are? They're in that safe right there.
Inspector Kramer, I know nothing about the diamonds. They are not in the safe, and they are not in the house. Now, you can take my word for it, or you can get a search warrant and make a fool of yourself. I'm going to have lunch.
By 2 o'clock, the newspapers were full of the murder of Mrs. Florence Avery March. The suspect was already in custody, caught at the home of Nero Wolf, well-known private investigator. Some of the stolen jewelry had been recovered, but not the diamonds. Then we had a visit from Mr. Anson Stark, who had opened Mrs. March's door and found her dead. Stark was a big athletic guy of about 30 or so, with the large, capable hands of a surgeon or a laboratory worker. He seemed annoyed at the inconvenience we caused him, but that was only natural.
That's the story, Mr. Wolf. I don't see how I can add anything more to it.
You had known Mrs. March for several years, huh?
Casually.
When you broke the door open, was it difficult?
Not very.
You were the first into the room?
There were three or four of us. We pushed in together.
You saw the body of Mrs. March immediately?
She was lying across the bed that was heaped with coats and hats and handbags.
You knew she was dead?
Of course not. In fact, somebody else discovered that she had been choked to death.
And who discovered that the diamonds were gone?
I don't know. I didn't.
Were there many diamonds, Mr. Stark?
No, just a few, but big ones. She wore them on a pendant around her neck.
Mr. Stark, I want to thank you again for having been so patient.
I have been patient, Mr. Wolf. I have my own business to attend to.
Which is?
Oh, I have a small but hopeful enterprise. Electronics, tubes for radio and television. Mostly experimental.
Well, that reminds me, Mr. Stark. When you entered the bedroom, was the light on or off?
Let me see. Of course, it was on. It must have been on. Why?
Just curiosity, Mr. Stark.
Oh? Anything more?
That's all, except thank you for coming here. Archie, will you take Mr. Stark to the door?
Mr. Stark departed like a man who'd been delayed by a petty annoyance. A few minutes later, the door buzzed, and I went, expecting anything. Anything but what was standing on the threshold when I opened up. A honey blonde. Or, to put it another way, a blonde honey. I said hello. No, more like hello.
Are you Mr. Wolf?
I'm his assistant, Archie Goodwin, and what can we do for you?
Well, I'm Valerie Ladd.
And I'm Archie Goodwin. Or did I tell you that?
Well, that's exactly where I came in. Well, I mean, where I thought you were going to ask me to come in.
Oh, come in, come in. I'm sorry.
How is he? Is he here?
Wolf?
Mm-hmm.
Does he know you?
No.
Is he expecting you?
No.
I see.
Of course you don't see, do you? Well, this is it, Mr. Goodwin. I'm a writer. Well, I may not look like it, but that's what I am. And I want to do a profile, a character study of Mr. Wolf for a magazine.
Oh.
Well, what's wrong?
Well, you see, there's a writer named Rex Stout.
Oh, I know. He's written a lot about Nero Wolf, but, well, can't I write about him, too?
I don't know if he's going to like it, but you can't be shot for trying. Come on. Mr. Wolf, this is Valerie Ladd.
Pardon me for not rising, Miss Ladd. It is not impolite. It is merely impracticable.
Miss Ladd wants to write about you for a magazine.
Please, Mr. Wolf.
Nonsense.
Mr. Wolf, if I could just spend a few hours with you, that would be enough.
Would it indeed?
Oh, yes.
Have you written much, Miss Ladd?
Oh, reams.
You know, the habits of writers interest me.
The habits?
Yeah, the writing habits. For instance, do you use a pen or a pencil? Do you dictate, or like most writers, do you do your own typing?
Mr. Wolf, if you knew the hours and days and years that I've pounded a typewriter.
Of course. Archie.
Yes, sir?
Why don't you take Miss Ladd up and show her the orchids?
You never know about Nero Wolf. At least I never do. This was something I would have bet against 1,000 to 1. I couldn't understand it. But I certainly couldn't complain.
Archie, look at this one. Oh, did you ever see anything so gorgeous?
Very pretty.
Oh, they're all just beyond belief.
Yeah?
But you're not even looking at them, Archie.
What? Oh!
Archie, are you always like this?
What do you mean, like this?
Well, so distant and preoccupied.
Honey, you got me wrong. Completely. I was thinking.
Oh.
Yeah, about telephone numbers.
It's a lovely thing to think about. What can you think about telephone numbers?
I was thinking how some girls have them and some don't.
Oh, I see. Archie, I apologize.
For what?
I did have you wrong. You're not a bit distant.
I can be a lot closer than this, honey. What is it?
What's what?
The number.
Oh, it's in the book.
Yeah? I wonder.
Out as if you don't believe me.
Oh, I believe you, but there's a telephone book here. Let's lick it up together, shall we?
Archie.
Yeah?
I'm afraid I lied to you.
I was afraid of that, too.
Are you angry?
Well, I can take no for an answer, honey, even when it's hard to take.
Archie, I've changed my mind. I want you to have my number, and I want you to use it, too.
You know, honey, I'm beginning to take an interest in this dialogue. Let's have it.
Okay. Olympia 93659.
And a very, very pretty number it is. Valerie Ladd. Two D's?
Mm-hmm.
Olympia 93659. Honey blonde. Gorgeous.
Oh.
Spelled gorgeous. There. What are we doing tonight, Olympia 9?
And I said that you were distant and preoccupied.
We were talking about tonight.
All right, Archie. Yes, I'd love it. Oh, these orchids, they're really beyond belief. And you won't even look at them.
True. I'm too busy looking at you.
Well, How do I look, Archie?
Beyond belief, honey. Beyond belief. Well, there goes the Goodwin luck again. It's a house phone, partner.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. Okay. He wants us to come down.
Archie?
Yes, dear.
Even if he says no, we still have a date?
Honey, though the heavens fall. When we entered the office, Mr. Wolf was frowning over a sheet of letter paper in his hand. He looked up and tossed the paper to me.
That is a peculiar thing, Archie. The sheet of letter paper just arrived. Since Miss Ladd is interested in detection, show it to her.
Thank you. Well, it's some sort of code, isn't it? Q-W-E-R-T-Y-U-I-O-P. That's all. What do you suppose it means?
You're kidding.
Archie.
Oh.
What? Did I say something wrong?
No.
Miss Ladd, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid I haven't time for an interview just now. Goodbye, Miss Ladd.
Oh, but Mr. Wolf...
Goodbye, Archie.
Say goodbye to Mr. Wolf and let's go, honey.
Goodbye.
That's the way things can be around here. Well, here's the door, and shall we pause for station identification?
Oh. I'll wipe it off, Archie. There.
Thanks.
What happened, Archie?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, Mr. Wolf, I mean.
Oh.
Why did he suddenly want me to go?
Well, I'll tell you, though I don't know whether I should. That code message he showed you?
Yes.
QWERTYUP.
You remember.
Yeah, sure. Because I use a typewriter. From left to right, it's the first bank of letters on any typewriter.
I see. It was a test.
Yeah. And you flunked it, baby. You're no writer.
Archie, I can explain
it. Sure. Tonight.
Tonight, Archie. You do believe me, don't you, Archie?
Oh, of course, baby, of course.
Well, it's just that I was there at the party, I mean, when poor Florence was murdered. Then I read in the paper about, well, how they caught the man at Nero Wolf's. And I always wanted to be a writer, so I thought if I could get an exclusive interview and, well, that would be a good way to start my career, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. Pardon me a second, will you, Valerie? I got to make a phone call. There's a booth. It'll only take a minute or two.
Nero Wolf speaking.
Archie, I'm at the Riviera with Valerie Ladd.
I'm happy for you, Archie.
I will remind you that I have not seen you since Valerie left the house.
I was otherwise occupied, Archie.
With orchids.
With orchids? What do you want, Archie?
Now look, with that typewriter gag, you practically told me she was a phony, didn't you?
Of course.
Just for the record, how did you know?
Have you looked at her fingernails? She never touched a typewriter in her life. But I wanted to be sure.
Okay, now, do you want me to tell you something?
You mean that your charming companion, Valerie, was at the party when Mrs. March was murdered?
How did you know that?
Simple, Archie. I got a list of the guests from Inspector Kramer. Among them was the name of Valerie Ladway. Simple?
Ladway. Ladd. Yeah, sure. Okay, what am I supposed to do about it?
Just hang on, Archie. Just hang on.
I went back to the honey blonde, the beautiful phony Valerie Ladway. I mean, I went back to the table where she should have been, but she wasn't there. I sat down and waited. Looked at my watch, 11:24. 11:32, no Miss Ladway. 11:45, I finally realized that not only Valerie, but her coat and bag were also absent. I called the waiter.
Yes, sir?
What happened to my friend?
The young lady left some time ago, sir.
Okay, give me the bill.
She paid it, sir.
She did?
Yes, sir. In fact, she said you gave her the money for it.
Yeah? Wait a minute. Well, I didn't know it, but she is certainly right.
Oh, room. Well, Archie, this is most thoughtless of you.
Sorry, I lost my keys. My money, too.
Your keys, Archie?
Yeah. Glad you were still up.
You lost Miss Ladway, too?
Definitely. I'm going to bed.
Good night, Archie.
You think it's funny, don't you?
Yes, Archie. Yes, yes, I do.
Good night, Mr. Wolf.
Archie.
Yeah?
Before you retire, one thing.
What?
Open the safe, will you? And leave it open.
Why?
Because there's nothing in it of importance. And it's a valuable safe, and I don't want it damaged. Good night, Archie.
At about 2 o'clock in the morning, I thought I heard a noise. I got up, put on the rest of my pajamas, picked up my gun, and went down to the office. The man had his head in the safe, and everything was scattered all over. I stepped inside the door. Put your hands behind your back and stand up.
Huh? Okay.
Now, just what are you after, Bob? When I woke up, I was alone on the office floor. I did not feel good. The place looked as if a hurricane had struck it. Every file drawer had been empty. I felt a draft from somewhere. Got to my feet, trying not to joggle my head too much. It was the front door standing open. Closed it gently. Then very, very gently, I groped my way to the kitchen for ice, water, and towels.
Archie!
What? Oh, didn't you hear me scream?
No. Is it bad?
It's better.
You're angry, aren't you?
Nuts.
What, Archie?
I said nuts, Mr. Wolf, nuts.
I'm sorry about what happened.
Yeah, you expected it.
But I didn't expect you to be caught by somebody behind you. You must have known there would have been two of them.
Now, how would I know that? How?
Think of Mr. Ladway's delicate hands. Do you believe she intended to open the safe herself?
You think she stole my keys and so on? Well, let me tell you... Hey, wait. That guy was digging in the safe that... Then who hit me in the head?
Archie, someday you'll be the death of me. In the morning, will you tell Inspector Kramer I'd like to see him here?
Fuming and protesting, Kramer arrived about 1:30. When I let him into the office, Mr. Wolf was gazing thoughtfully at the ground floor plan of the house of the late Mrs. Florence Avery March. We'd gotten it from the original architects. Wolf looked up and almost smiled.
Thank you for coming to me, Inspector. You know how difficult it is for me to come to you.
Okay, what's up?
I take it you haven't found the diamonds.
No, not yet. We'll break Inch down, though. Don't think we won't.
Oh, I'm sure. But this is what I want to ask you, and it's quite serious.
Okay, all right, what?
After the body was found, your men arrived at the house before anyone left.
Right.
And before anybody was allowed to go, every person was searched thoroughly.
Nobody could have gotten a pin or a needle out of that place.
I know something about police methods, and I believe you. Now, how thoroughly did you search the house itself?
Wolf, look. We've got that floor plan you're studying now. There are no hidden closets. Every square inch of that house has been examined. The diamonds aren't there. Willie Inch killed the dame and snatched the diamonds. What he did with them, we'll find out.
Possibly. Goodbye, Inspector.
At approximately 3:15, the postman arrived with an envelope for me. The envelope contained my keys, the bill from the Riviera, and the money left after the check was paid. At approximately 5:07 p.m., I discovered that Wolf had been using the telephone all by himself. He explained. He was going to have a party. He had invited all of the guests who were at Mrs. Florence Avery March's somewhat fatal party, including Anson Stark, Willie Inch, and Valerie. Nero Wolf, the natural-born ham, he made an entrance that would have been worthy of Queen Victoria in her heavier days. He sat in his oversized throne behind his oversized desk and beamed at the peasants. Valerie moved toward me.
I'm sorry, Archie, but you must know why I did it.
Why?
Well, you said I wasn't a writer. I wanted to prove that you weren't a detective.
Did you take the stuff while we were dancing?
I could have.
couldn't I?
You could have bumped me on the head last night, too, couldn't you?
Oh, Archie.
Let it go. It was humiliating, though.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure you realize the purpose of this party. We want to know who killed Mrs. March and what became of her diamonds. Mr. Inch.
Yeah?
When you visited the room where the body was found, the room was dark?
The bulb was burned out. I tried to turn it on.
If there had been a body on the bed, would you have seen it?
Maybe. With all those coats, maybe not.
Sure. Mr. Stark?
Yes, I said the light was on. Perhaps I was wrong. What of it?
You're engaged in the manufacture of tubes for radio and television, huh?
I told you that.
Inspector Kramer.
Yeah, what?
A light bulb was found in the wastebasket in the room where Mrs. March died.
Yeah, like you said, we tried the bulb in the socket and it worked. So what?
One more question. Does anybody remember whether Mr. Stark was carrying a bundle or a package under his arm when he arrived at Mrs. March's party?
Oh, I do, Mr. Wolfe. I think he had a box of flowers.
That's true. I did bring flowers.
No, Mr. Stark. That box contained two parts of a light bulb and some adhesive. During the party, you strangled Mrs. March, put the diamonds into the light bulb, assembled the thing, and screwed it into the lamp socket. Archie, stop him! Really, Archie, it was quite simple. Light bulbs are only a stem glass bowl and a brass sheath. Yet nobody, including the police, would think of looking inside one. And Mr. Stark could come back and collect his treasure any time after the excitement had died down. What's the matter, Archie?
I got a headache.
Valerie Ladd. Ladby. Poor girl. She and whoever the man was with her must have thought the diamonds were here. That bump on your head will be better in the morning. Bottle of beer, please, Archie.
I'm going to bed.
Yes. Why must you place such confidence in women? Remember what happened to Mark Antony and Samson and Archie Goodwin. Good night, Archie.
You have been listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight's transcribed story by Mindred Lord was based on the characters created by Rex Stout, produced and directed by J. Donald Wilson. This is an Edwin Fadiman production. In the cast were Harry Bartell as Archie Goodwin, and G.G. Pearson, Bud Heaston, Gray Stafford, Dick Ryan, and Bill Johnstone. Next week at this same time, Nero Wolfe and Archie will bring you The Case of the Midnight Ride. Don Stanley speaking. Three chimes mean good times on NBC.
That's going to do it for this episode of Case Closed. I hope you enjoyed our stories this time. If you'd like to find more from Sherlock Holmes, Nero Wolfe, past episodes of Case Closed, and thousands of other old-time radio episodes, just visit RelicRadio.com and search away. You'll also find our Shoutcast stream running even more old-time radio for your enjoyment. And if you'd like to help support it all, help keep it all free and coming to you every week, please consider a donation. It's how all of this is made possible. Just click on the donate link when you are visiting the website, or visit donate.relicradio.com and it'll take you right to it. My thanks, as always, to those who have helped out, and thanks for joining me today. Be back next Wednesday with Johnny Dollar and Philip Marlowe on another episode of Case Closed.